3 and...
Greetings and welcome to Caribbean Forum here on the Uhuru Radio Network, where we expand our ability to communicate and unite the struggles of African people towards victory and independence in our lifetime. I'm Ron Bob Semple, and here on the Forum, we'll examine issues that affect Caribbean and Caribbean American nationals, both at home and across the diaspora. We'll bring you news, views, interviews, thought-provoking discussions, Caribbean theater of the mind, and, of course, musical interludes. Well, joining us during our first hour in our Caribbean Theater of the Mind segment will be playwright, poet, musician, and educator, Edgar Nkosi White. And during our second hour, we'll take a look at the developments, or lack thereof, of the conditions in Haiti after that devastating earthquake hit some 5 months ago. So call and tell someone that Caribbean Forum is on the air for the next 2 hours on the Uhuru Radio Network, uhurunews.com. We'll open the phone line so you can join us in discourse. Once the lines are open, you can call us. If you're calling in the confines of the United States, it's area code 727-565-1599, or you can Skype us at Uhuru Radio, U-H-U-R-U Radio. And for those of you listening to us, across the pond from the United Kingdom, you can call us at 440-8133-6629, or you can email us at DJ, as in disc jockey, DJ@uhuru.com. Well, good morning, Brother Nyabinga, and welcome back.
Ooh, good morning. Good to be here.
Absolutely, absolutely. I know you've been very busy, as we were talking last Saturday, and of course throughout the week here on Uhuru Radio. Preparations are in full swing for the upcoming 5th Congress of the African People's Socialist Party next weekend.
Yes.
And I'm sure you're up to your eyeballs or your eyelids in preparation, Brother Nyabinga. Just keep us up to date. And for those of the listeners who may still be interested in attending the conference, give us an update as to what's happening.
Well, as you said, the Congress is going to be beginning 1 week from today. And it is an exciting and bustling time right now in preparation for the Congress. It's going to be really incredible event. This Congress is the process where the African People's Socialist Party elects its leadership and determines, you know, its direction, the Congress is that process for us. It is the highest body of our organization, and the process where the whole membership of our party is able to vote on these things. And so it's also important for our supporters and others to be there at the Congress to be able to participate in the process and raise, you know, what they'd like to raise and just witness, you know, this incredible process, you know, because it is a party of the people. Unlike the Democratic or Republican Party, this is African People's Party, you know. And
is this a worldwide organization?
Yes, it is. This Congress is the Congress of the APSP USA, the African People's Socialist Party USA, which is the U.S. front of the African Socialist International African Revolutionary Organization, led by the African working class.
Who are some of the keynote speakers?
At this Congress, you'll hear presentations by Omalia Shetela, the chairman of the African People's Socialist Party. You'll hear presentations by Chokwe Lumumba, who is the head of NAPO, the New African People's Organization. You'll hear from people like Ifeah Nwangaza, who is a veteran of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee's Atlanta Project that came up with the that formulated the demand for Black Power. Mm-hmm. People like Pam Africa, who is represents the family and friends of Mumia Abu-Jamal
in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. also you have representatives of the governments of Venezuela and Nicaragua. You have Africans participating in this process, representing organization, the African Socialist International, in from places like Sierra Leone, from Guinea, where there's an uproar happening right now, from Trinidad and Colombia, South America. So it's going to be an incredible Europe. It's going to be an incredible process, you know, it's one that should not be missed.
I was just about asking, is this just for the African population?
Well, it's open for others to participate as well. You know, one of the things we recognize in the African People's Socialist Party is that our struggle against imperialism is the same struggle that oppressed peoples all around the world are waging, you know, and so it's open for others to participate as well. So, you know, come on through, you know, and yeah, it is the place to be. Even if you're not an African, you know, if you are down for justice, for freedom, for peoples around the world, then this is the place that you want to be at.
Again, the Fifth Congress of the African People's Socialist Party will be held July 10th through the 14th. And how can one get in contact with the organization, Brother Nyabinga, in case they're still interested in attending?
You can contact us in a couple of different ways. One, you can go to the website. That's APSPCongress.org. Again, APSP, and that's the acronym for African People's Socialist Party, APSPCongress.org. Or you can call us at 727-821-6620. The Congress is going to be happening in Washington, D.C. at the Kellogg Center. So, you know, go to the website or call us and you know, check it out and be there. You know, be there. And the thing is, you know, nobody is going to be turned away, you know, for lack of funds or anything like that. You know, if you want to be there, then get there and you'll be able to be there.
A telephone number?
Yes, 727-821-6620.
Okay, that's the One People, One Party, One Destiny, the Fifth Congress of the African People's Socialist Party.
Yes.
Next weekend, July 10th through 14th, which means that the Caribbean Forum and other programming will be preempted
yes.
next weekend because the Congress will be broadcast, if not live, at least a delayed broadcast. So we would not be on the air next weekend, next Saturday, but we will be joining you the following Saturday. Brother Nyabinga, thank you very much, and looking forward. I would have loved to have been there, but I have another commitment. Next weekend. Okay, you're listening to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network. Here's some new dreams. New dreams by an artist who has been around doing his thing, Meshack. New dreams here on the Uhuru Radio Network. Enjoy. So hey, all you leaders,
together, make we battle the odds. Chant Naya, Bingy, Reggae, and the rubber dub. I make we dwell in a perfect love.
Yes, love surely makes the world go round. That's Meshack. A selection, New Dreams, taken from his album, Awake. You're listening to Caribbean Forum here on the Uhuru Radio Network. I am Ron Bob Semple. And now we turn to the news in brief. And a fire of unknown origin raged through the business and residential community of Madia, a gold mining township in the rural section of Guyana, leaving millions of dollars in losses and at least 200 people homeless. Regional Chairman Senor Bell said that there were no immediate reports of deaths or injuries as a result of the blaze. Madia does not have fire tenders, so residents use tanks of water and other means to help bring the blaze under control, but with little immediate success. The Barbadian Prime Minister David Thompson has announced that he will be taking a 2-month leave of absence to undergo treatment and possible major surgery. At a hastily called news conference at government headquarters on Thursday, Mr. Thompson explained that he would be leaving in a matter of hours to continue treatment for a serious illness which he has yet to name. He confirmed that Attorney General Frendel Stewart will act as Prime Minister in his absence. Now, Britain has agreed to provide the crisis-hit Turks and Caicos Islands with a $15 million emergency dollar loan. The UK's International Development Secretary Andrew Mitchell told Parliament that Britain has been forced to provide the bailout funds to pay the salaries of some public officers in the corruption-hit British Overseas Territory. The economy of the Turks and Caicos Islands has stalled amid political turmoil and the global financial downturn. British Minister Mitchell says without immediate help, the Caribbean island territory will fall into even deeper trouble. The Puerto Rican government has begun to issue new birth certificates to everyone born on the U.S. territory. The move is an attempt to combat widespread identity theft. Stolen birth certificates were being sold by criminal gangs to people who wanted to fraudulently apply for U.S. citizenship. The FBI broke up a ring that had stolen some 12,000 birth certificates. And now in the world of sports, the West Indies Cricket Board, the WICB, recently announced the details for the inaugural Caribbean 2020 tournament, which will be played from July 22nd through the 31st. The tournament, which will form part of the annual WICB calendar, will have the first phase played in Barbados, July 22nd to the 25th, with the second phase in Trinidad, July 28th through the 31st. 8 teams will be involved in the Caribbean T20. The West Indies territorial teams, Barbados, combined campuses and colleges, Guyana, Jamaica, Leeward Islands, Trinidad and Tobago, and Windward Islands will be joined by an international team. There's a huge incentive to win the Caribbean T20, with the leading regional team going on to represent the West Indies at the Artel Champions League in South Africa in September. And that's the news on brief here on Caribbean Forum. I'm Ron Bob Semple with you on the Uhuru Radio Network. And with what what we provide here on the Uhuru Radio Network, there is cause that we live for love. The one and only Miriam Makeba, the late Miriam Makeba, cause we live for love. Soothing sounds of Miriam Makeba here on the Uhuru Radio Network with me, Ron Bob Semple. The Caribbean Forum, heard every Saturday from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Well, joining us this morning is Edgar Nkosi White. He's a playwright, a poet, a novelist, a musician, and an educator. Brother Edgar Nkosi White, good morning and welcome to Caribbean Forum and welcome to
good
the
morning,
Uhuru Radio Network.
Morning, world. How are we doing?
We're doing great, my brother. Thank you for being here. I know we
what
had
is the weather there?
Do you really want to know, sir?
Well, it's about to be sweltering here in New York.
Well, we're getting some well-deserved rain. Been hot up until 2 days ago. We were in the 90s every day since June 3rd. So we know what you're experiencing with that.
You get a little respite.
Well, you know, it's deep south. At least the weather is closer to that that we're used to at home.
Good preparation for the world to come.
Well, I don't know. That could be debatable, my brother. That could be very debatable. So how have you been?
I've been excellent, man.
I know that you're extremely busy. And I just like you to, you know, just brief our listeners and what Edgar White has been doing, You were born in Montserrat.
Yes, and unfortunately, I've been home recently. I went home for my birthday, and on Montserrat we had the first Montserrat Festival of the Arts, the Ali O'Gana Festival. I was very proud of that. They had invited me down. That was in November, and promised that I was going to come back for my birthday, which was in April, and I did, and spent a month there, and it was fantastic. Yeah.
Give us a little background history about Montserrat, because you know, within the last 5 or 10 years, what we really hear, we in the outer world, what we only hear about Montserrat is the Soufrière Hills and the
volcano. Well, we've been visited with a volcano.
Right.
And a very active volcano, the Soufrière volcano, and it's taken half of the island away. And there's now a population of 5,000. That's called the remnant, those who refuse to leave. And, you know, spirits are high, and just looking forward for respite from the volcano. It's the most watched volcano in the world. They've got volcanologists from all over the world watching it, but they just can't tell us with any certainty when or what's going to happen. It's interesting that of late the volcanoes seem to be very much in the world, you know, consciousness because of Iceland, what's happened there. You know, it's something. I think it is in the air, my friend. And you know, it's a world community, isn't it? The one the volcano in Iceland seemed to have stopped all traffic all through Europe. It's completely disrupted people's lives, and so they've got a taste of what Montserrat has had to go through for pretty much near 10 years. But you know, you learn to cope.
You're right. It's difficult to even perceive, excuse me,
yes,
to perceive that the Soufrière volcano is an undersea volcano that erupted from the ocean's floor.
And that's, you know, it's a full circle, my friend, because that's how the Caribbean got started, you know. It was all eruption. And it just lets you know that we are not in control, you know. God is very much in charge of what's happening, and whatever our technology and all of the cleverness that man has, that the bottom line is that you know, we propose to God, you know, he disposes, he makes the way, and that's it. I'm very proud of my island, though, that the people, the spirits have been very, very high.
I was just about asking you that. Sorry to cut you.
Yeah,
but you referred to 5,000 quote unquote remnants of those who refuse to stay. What are their spirits
and
like?
People still get married. They still have children. you know, they had an evacuation, and many had gone to England, which is the so-called motherland. And it was interesting, my friend, that more people died who left than who stayed. They died from, they were placed in the coldest place in Great Britain, which is Newcastle on Tyne. Many of the elderly people who had never experienced severe cold before just got it. It was too much for them. And so many more died, you know, in exile, and had their bodies taken back to Montserrat than those who stayed. You know, so it's ironic. But there are those who said, "Listen, let me stay. If I'm going to die, let me die where I come from. You know, I'm peace. I have my home here. Let me be here on this rock."
I guess that's the that's a reverse of leaving the frying pan and going right into the fire.
And you know what? You want to see God's irony? One person actually left Montserrat saying they're going to try to get as far away from the Caribbean as possible into a safe zone. You know where she went? She went to Iceland.
Wow.
When that thing happened, you know, several months ago, she just could not believe. You know, she wondered if it was her. You know, is it following me?
You know, because
Iceland has not had an eruption over a century, you know. And there it was, you know. So what is for you is for you, you know.
What is the economy like, Edgar, there in Montserrat? Now that so many people have left, and there's always this concern that this volcano could erupt at any time.
Yeah, people find a way. It's amazing that people have found a way to do to find other professions. They fell back on the culture. There's so many people, some who were in other businesses such as accounting or whatever, government, went into opening restaurants. It's amazing that each person has a specialty. Everyone on the island knows who does the best. Our staple is goat water, and who as the very best, and, you know, this is the thing. People find a way to survive.
Now, Brother Edgar, I can't just let you off the hook like that. You can't just throw out a terminology like that, and like goat water. Now, you're going to have to break that down for the listeners, my brother, and explain exactly what the goat water is good for, what it is not good for, etc.
And the thing is this, that, you know, we're unique in that we were colonized by the Irish. You know, both the Irish and the English, but mainly the Irish. And it's a gift from the Irish, but we have our own stamp on it, you know, the African stamp. And it's absolutely delicious. It's, as I say, mutton with rice. And of course, there's always cassava. You know, this is the thing that that has kept us alive for generations, and it's absolutely beautiful. Once you eat it, you got to come back, must come back, you know. So we've been doing that. What's happening with me now? I'm getting ready to do a conference in Barbados. There's going to be a workshop that is going to be coming up. I'm looking forward to that, and also in England. The National Archives, for the first time, has dealt with black playwrights. They've never taken us seriously in England, you know. The Olivier Theatre, the big Olivier Theatre, the National Theatre of Great Britain, has never, you know, dealt with black writers before. And now they have done that. They did a write-up with me. And what has happened, the film, all of my plays are now on archive, will be, you know, accessible to students, be able to get it on the web. I was fortunate, I spent 10 years in England and I've done about over 20 plays.
Before we get into any details about that conference, I'd just like to retract where this all started, your literary career. Began after you won a citywide poetry contest, which is adjudicated by none other than Langston Hughes. Yeah, tell us about that experience.
I was very, very blessed. He was the first, that was in high school, and I had an opportunity to meet him. And he told me, encouraged me to write, and gave me very, very good advice as to how to go about that. But the unique thing about Langston Hughes was that he was so human. You know, there are very few writers who, if you talk about pursuing a career in art, will actually go out of their way and assist you. You know, they'll usually give you lip service and say, well, you know, yeah, if you want to write, you should write, son. You know, that sort of thing. That happened with James Baldwin with me. But Langston actually went out and got me a publisher. He got my first work published, which was a collection of, my first collection of plays. And it was fantastic. And from that, you know, it's continued. And I think that because he was such a dynamic figure, and, you know, you only really help people when you don't feel threatened. He never felt, you know, he never felt threatened. He never felt that someone, usually what they say, when you get up there, you you pull up the ladder. This has been the case so often with artists. And he spoiled me, because I actually, after meeting Langston and working with him, I really thought that this was the way that all artists were. You know what I mean? And I've come to find, no.
You're proving
not
wrong.
The way it works. You know, he really went out of his way. He helped me, and he helped so many. If it were not for Langston, I'm telling you, the doors to the Caribbean, in terms of writers, people like Derek Walcott, Nobel Prize winner like that. He was the first. Langston was the first to introduce Walcott and Samuel Lamming.
George Lamming,
mm-hmm. Samuel Seldman. You know, people like this. He was the first to even let publishers over here know that people in the Caribbean were writing. And the same thing with Africa. He did the same thing with Wally Soyinka. He was he introduced all of these people to the West,
but Edgar,
and through anthologies, you know. So I can't speak too much about him. He was a major, major towering figure.
Why don't we see many more Derek Walcotts or George Lammings coming out of the Caribbean?
Well, my friend, at this point, I think that given it has a lot to do with the politics.
Did you say politics or politics?
There we are. You know, it is no accident that there are no radical Caribbean leaders anymore. There are no more Morris Bishops. You know, I had the good fortune to do one of my plays in Grenada. You know, dealing with that issue. And as a result of that, people are frightened to give opinions. You know, that's what it has to do with. Usually you will find there are many teachers, but very few people who will say, I will commit my life to art, because it's not a safe prospect. There's no safety net, you know, and you can always be spanked if you say the wrong thing. So, but I think that... given the tempo of what is happening, given the economic situation of the world, and you see that it's global. It's not just when America suffers, the whole world, you know, is affected. I think that...
When America sneezes, the whole world catches pneumonia.
Absolutely. And I think that is going to make people deal on a more realistic level with their lives. I see it coming. I see. That's why I was so excited about these workshops and the Festival of the Word. I mean, just imagine the arrogance of a little island like Montserrat that's having this volcano, and yet say, you know what? We have to remember our culture. You know, let's take a chance on that. As bad as things are, let's never forget the roots, the central roots of where we came from, and that's what's going to save us. And they did not go the way of, thank God they have not taken the Kool-Aid and gone into the madness of tourism the way that, say, right next door we have Antigua, for example. Mm-hmm. Total contrast. It's only 15 minutes away.
That's right.
You know, and yet total contrast, because in Antigua, you have all of these tourist ships coming in, seven-story, monster leviathans, coming into the harbor, and people singing that. But they get nothing. There's no exchange.
More people on the ship than there are on the island.
That sort of thing. They come in, and, you've got people up on the ships who, can't even remember which island they visited last. You know, it's all the same, one blur to them. They come in, but they don't give. There's no exchange. There's no life force. And the people are beginning to realize that they're exploited, and you are the flavor for this month. Next month, let's go to Aruba. You know what I'm saying? That's if your whole existence depends on tourism, you are totally at their mercy. You can't do that. Yep. You have to have something which is you. You know, which your essence, and that's what culture gives, you know. And Montserrat is one, thank God, one of the few places that really stays in touch with that. They've never lost that. There's always been a reverence for the word, a reverence for theater, for dance, and for movement, you know, and I really feel good about that. And that's why I will always go home, you know, no matter whatever the situation, I will find a way to do that.
As you go home and you travel around the Caribbean, mm-hmm. how would you qualify or quantify the quality of life in the Caribbean today?
I would say that what is happening is that the biggest threat that I see, my friend, is that people have lost touch with the agriculture, the earth. There's so few young people who know anything about growing. If they had to survive by growing their own crops, no one would. They are totally dependent on the United States, and therefore the economic forces of, for example, you saw what happened in Haiti with the rice, where they, you know, even before the last disaster, the people were starving in the streets. Why? Because they could no longer feed themselves. The United States will give you money, and the World Bank and all of that. They will, but it's always a proviso. You cannot grow your own crop. You will have to be dependent on our rice and the pigs and all of this sort of thing that they stopped using. There's a difference between the black pigs of Haiti and seeds. You've got people like Monsanto, which are telling you what you have to use our seeds if you want American money. You know, it's always this package deal, and then you become totally dependent on them. Yes, yeah. And when the prices become so outrageous that the people can't afford it, what happens? You know, they starve, they end up eating mud, you know.
And the mud cakes there in Haiti.
That's the thing.
You know, and places like Guyana, you know, it's got so much land.
Guyana, you see the breadbasket of the Caribbean.
83,000 square miles, it doesn't have a million people.
I remember everyone always used to say when I was growing up, oh man, Guyana, you know, one BG planting.
That's it, to fill up the pot.
You know, it was the rice, you know, everything. And what has happened? What's happened to all that?
And the Caribbean is so rich.
You know, and yet the revolution for me is not about guns. It's the revolution is about taking back over your land. And I think that, you know, that out of necessity becomes there's so many possibilities. I think that we need to get in touch with agribusiness and particularly the green economy. You know, I think that is the way to go. That will be the saving force. And I was very proud of even in Africa. Remember, Zambia said refused Monsanto to take the. You know, the, said no, thank you. If what you're saying is you'll give us money if we, you know, use it, no, you can keep that. You know, that's what has to happen. And I think the young people need to go and speak with the elders who have the knowledge of medicinal plants. You know, so much, you know, unless it now, with these drug companies, unless it comes from a bottle, people, you know, they won't take the same health things are right there growing in front of you, and yet, you know. People have no knowledge of how of what to do with it. If you ask them, you know, what is this plant for? What is it, they can't tell you. They don't have knowledge.
You know, growing up in Guyana, you get an ailment. You know, you go to Aunt Mary, and she goes in the backyard pulls up something out of the dirt.
Right.
Not until you come abroad to North America that you hear what diabetes and diabetes in the Caribbean.
Things that would cut the sugar, you know, bitter herbs, this sort of thing.
Corella.
Aloes, you know, so many things are right there for you. And if you lose that knowledge, then you end up doing what's happened to people once they hit their 50s here. They end up totally dependent, you know, they're taking so many different pills, my friend.
And
that they
do not know how one interacts with the other.
Thank you.
A prescription for this and prescription for that, but the doctor, the medical personnel, they don't know what happens in your body when the two coagulate or three coagulate.
Yes, you're right. They have no knowledge of what of what happens from, you know, what, and of course there's this, they are not meant to be taken together. You do, and then you become strung out on this thing where you have to take this for the rest of your life.
That's
every
right.
day you're taking 6 and 7 different pills.
Absolutely.
And it's sad.
We can
and
go on.
Also the problem of weight, you're obese, you know, mm-hmm. that you look at, you know, why are so many, even in people from the Caribbean who are living here, why they have such a weight problem? You know, they're eating the same foods that they ate back home, but they can't. Even the children.
Well,
you
it's got a whole lot of pesticides and stuff
that's
right now, right?
The thing.
And you remember when you
so
go to school,
much.
You walk to school,
yeah.
and then you leave school at 11:30. You walk home, have lunch, walk back to school. You're
yeah.
so you're just constantly exercising.
That's the thing, and I. And I love to see when I go home, I see the elderly who are always first thing
on
in the morning.
Move.
First of all, they're up early. That's number one. They're up before the heat of the day. You know, 6 o'clock, people are up doing, you know, and they're out. And everybody is walking. They're walking those hills. And you see the minds are sharp. The bodies are fit. They're slim, you know, and they have a history. And then you come here and you know you see what happens here. They allocate everyone to nursing homes. They become like warehouses here. It's so sad, so sad. You know, and so there's so much that we can learn from back home, and we have to stay in touch with it. That's what that to me is a lesson, a major lesson.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network. Chatting with us this morning is Edgar Nkosi White. He's a playwright, a poet, a novelist, a musician, an ordained minister, and an educator. But I left out the first qualification on his on his bio. It says human being as an occupation. But we're not going to get into that yet. If you'd like to join us here in this discourse, you're calling within the United States, you can call us at area code 727-565-1599. If you're calling us from across the pond in the United Kingdom, it's 440-203-36629. You can also Skype us at Uhuru Radio, U-H-U-R-U Radio, or you can email us at DJ, as in disc jockey, DJ at uhururadio.com. Edgar, earlier in the on our discourse, you mentioned that Langston Hughes had really encouraged you to write and to write. Do you have a special place where you have to be creative writing?
I usually, for me, the dawn, that's a space. That's a space, okay? I like to be up and start working before it gets, you know, before the wickedness sets in. At home, I love to get up and be by the sea. I find that it feeds me so much energy. But the thing is this, for me, you have to find that silent space, you know, in yourself, and that's where the creativity comes from. I remember the Langston, the best thing that I got from him. Every day he was always walking the streets, always. You know, wherever he was, he would be walking. But particularly in Harlem, here in Harlem, he would make that circuit. Morningside Park up by City College. He'd walk every day, and that would be the life force that would give him the inspiration. You know what he told me, that you know it's not in the books. You can learn the books, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You learn the
mm-hmm.
skill of the words, but everything that you need, your palate is in front of you. You have to learn to use your eyes. You know, you see a street scene, you see people standing around. But what is really happening there? You know, it's the more love that you have, the more you can see. And I think one of our biggest problems, why the writing that I'm seeing now is so superficial. The first thing you have to do is love yourself. If you don't love yourself, then you can't identify with your people, your family. That's where it starts from. Everything you need is right in your family. You know, if you're looking, we have a tendency, those who go to the universities and so forth, they look everywhere else but right in front, right in that family. And
yes,
that's the source of your energy. That, the black church, I just came back from Philadelphia, by the way, where I was researching the history of the black church, the AME Zion Church, where you have people like Absalom Jones and Allen, Richard Allen, who were the first. That was where the first black church in the United States was, in Philadelphia. And the thing that it's amazing about that is the self-sufficiency. That he owned the church and the land through blacksmithing, that's the thing that people don't realize. Anything to do with blacksmithing in this country has to do with black people, because that was where we were, the blacksmiths. He used that money to build churches. He built, now the one that is presently there now is the fourth church, because the congregation kept getting larger and larger. And, you know, he said, if you, the same thing that Garvey said later on, own your own.
Mm-hmm.
When you do that, no one can tell you anything.
He was the first
to step away from that white church, because of the fact that they did not want us worshiping at the altar. They didn't mind us coming in the church, but not kneeling at the altar. You know?
Rather than looking for the pie in the sky, why don't you just plant the potatoes to make the pie?
So he saw it, and what he did, he through that, you know, the self sufficiency, that he was able to take for people to purchase their own freedom. You know, this is an incredible thing, but he was able to do that, and his family, through his family, and all of it, get his family from slavery through that self-sufficiency. But the essence was the religion. That is what has kept us sane in all of this madness. That the fact is, very simply put, it comes down to this: we need God. We need God in our lives. You know, they don't. They can work a deal and buy their way out. They can always look for loopholes and all this sort of thing. But the thing is that we have an absolute need, a physical, in addition to the spiritual need. We actually get ill if we don't have something to believe in as black people, because our essence is from that African tradition. That's what we're about.
Yeah, we're gonna,
and so that's why the church is so in that AME church is so important, and to see it, you know, to see it flourish. One other thing, you know, that they have a play.
Why don't you put a pin on that, Edgar? We're going to take a short break.
Okay.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network. We're chatting with Edgar and Kosi White, poet and musician and an ordained minister and an educator, chatting with us out of New York. And we'll be right back after these messages.
Get ready now for one of the most important events of our time, the Fifth Congress of the African People's Socialist Party. The Congress convenes on July 10th through 14th in Washington, D.C. under the slogan, One People, One Party, One Destiny. Hear presentations by African People's Socialist Party Chairman Omali Yeshitela and other leaders of the APSP, and witness as the party ushers in a new era of struggle. A new day is on the horizon. The U.S. front of the African Revolution will never be the same. For more info on the Congress, go to www.apspcongress.org or call 727-821-6620.
Set sail with the Uhuru Movement and the African People's Socialist Party on December 12th through 18th for a 7-day cruise to Key West, Grand Cayman, and Ocho Rios, Jamaica, aboard the luxurious Carnival Freedom cruise ship. Special guests include our very own Chairman Omali Yeshitela, leader of the Uhuru Movement, and the very talented Ron Bob Semple, creator of The Spirit of Marcus Garvey, a one-man show in which Semple delivers an uncanny exactness of the legendary Garvey, transporting the onlooker back to the time of the revolutionary spirit that gave birth to the African Socialist International. Cabin prices are from $519 per person. Double occupancy and deposits start as low as $50 today, $250 by July 12th. For more information, please visit our website at uhurulegacycruise.com. That's uhurulegacycruise.com. Book your room today with Tanya's Travel by calling 352-232-2131 or by email at tanyastravel@bellsouth.net. We hope you all can set sail with us on the ship named for our struggle, freedom. Uhuru.
Yes, I certainly hope you all can join us and set sailing on December 12th to the 18th, the Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise, the Uhuru Legacy Cruise. And I know Marcus Garvey is rather near and dear to our guest, Edgar Nkosi White, who wrote one of his many, many plays. He wrote as I, Marcus Garvey, which I had the honor and the privilege and the pleasure to play the title role many, many moons ago. Having met Edgar many, many moons ago, I said to my brother, and I said to him, you know, it's been what? It's about 35 years ago we met.
Give or take a day.
And the experience that I have had over the years has really fueled me. Not only with the I, Marcus Garvey, one of your pieces that I did was Lament for Rastafari at the Ellen Stewart's Cafe La Mama in Lower Manhattan. But one project on which we worked, and we'll get back to the point that you left off just before the break, one of the projects that is so memorable to me personally is the workshop project that we conducted at Joseph Papp Theater, out of which came Three Kings Darkly.
Yes, Three Kings Darkly.
You know, and
the invasion of Grenada.
Yes, you know, that experience, you know, there's a bunch of actors, you know, in Basil Wallace as Lou Ferguson, and we sat down there and just talked and there is Brother Nkosi just sitting in a corner, just absorbing. And before you know it, in about 2 weeks, or was it that long, sir?
Yes. that 2 week workshop, we created
that drama. Piece. Yeah,
that's the way I love to work, and that to me is the most energizing. Where you have a group of actors and you trust them, and you trust each other, and you feed each other energy, and out of that, just like the church, out of that, you comes the work. I love doing that, and it was, you know, what was also incredible was taking that play and actually performing it in Grenada.
Mm.
And the people just loved it. And the thing was this, you know, that in Grenada they still have the downed plane that the Americans shot down, you know, and they are not allowed to remove that. It is very much to me like Rome. You know, Rome used to have the crosses they would put on the hills to remind you that this is what happens if you disbehave, you know.
A constant reminder.
And we will crucify you. Yes. And so the children, just imagine this. The children have to go to school every day and pass this reminder, this thing that says, you know, you don't, you now see? See that there? That's what will happen to you if you dare oppose the might of this mighty nation. And, you know, and it can be done silently. They need say nothing. You're just looking at this, you know. So it's amazing. But theater, the possibilities of theater are limitless.
Limitless,
because
absolutely.
Theater is a life force. And I think that as long as theater is dealing with what is happening, what is the world before your eyes, then it will be vital. You know, it's all well and good. Entertainment is fine. Fleeting. You know, it's like for a second. And then
fleeting moment.
Yes. But when you have something that really, that's what theater was originally. It was, that was the newspaper. That's how it started. That was, you know, that's why the intensity of, you know, the early dramas, or they talk about Greek drama and all of this, which actually came out of Africa, mm-hmm. The African chorus. the way, you know, the way that those that the Greeks use the chorus is right out of Africa. They still have those rituals in Nigeria and so forth, where the chorus comments, you know, they represent the elders. All of this, it's all a circle. You know, the way that the people, because the people could see before them the truth, and the thing is, a lot of times, because life is moving so quickly, you know, you can't grasp it. But when you slow it down, when you have a chance to raise it up, you know, that's what the theater is. And also the audience, not only does the writer from his inside give things, but the audience teaches each other. Just like in church, you know, because someone, maybe you might not get something, but if your neighbor gets it, and then their response, and you see them, then it clarifies for you. You know what I mean? So there's this constant circle, this energy moving. Ritual, that to me is the strongest form of theater, and that's why I love it so much. And thank God, look, like you, Ron,
yeah.
The thing is this, we are still excited. You know, this is the thing I talk to young people. They're tired already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're weary in their 20s. I've got a son who's now, he's just hit 30, and panic. Oh, my God, I'm not a household name. I'm not Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all MTV generation.
It takes a long time to be an overnight success.
Sort of thing, you know. And if it doesn't happen instantly, they're like, why didn't it happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the thing is, what is it that why are you able to you know, you look forward every year to, you know, to going and still dealing with Garvey, you know, still, you know, and you're always learning.
Absolutely, absolutely.
This is the thing, when you, because it's this constant feeding of energy, and this is what keeps, as long as you are in touch with that force, it's eternal youth.
I'm trying to put my hands on, and if anybody is listening out there in Radio Land or throughout the world, there's a play that Marcus Garvey wrote called "I Am Not a Slave." I'm still looking. I've been looking for years, trying to find out anyone that may have a cover.
It'll come.
I am not a slave.
Because the thing is that the people are still around. I know that. Even when I was doing things in Montserrat, there's still people telling me about they saw Garvey there.
That's right.
Can you believe?
That's right.
That he came to the harbor and he spoke from the ship, you know. And there's still copies of these original speech, you know. So
back
it's an ongoing thing.
Back in February, Brother Edgar. Back in February, I did my presentation in St. Petersburg, where the studio is located now. And there was a brother in the audience. He was about 93 years old and talked about him seeing Garvey on 138th Street in Manhattan, listening to him, and to know that he's in, you know, in that room, you know, with the image and the ideologies and the philosophies of Garvey just took me elsewhere.
Who were navigators on the ships.
Yeah, absolutely. Still around.
Yes.
We're going to wrap up in a few, but before I let you go, Edgar, just tell us about your novel, your latest novel, or your newest novel, The Rising.
The Rising.
Mm-hmm.
The Rising deals with Montserrat. Thank God. You know, beautiful thing about writing is that you are able to create to capture that universe, to record it like a canvas. Thank God, because half of the island is gone. That Montserrat that I wrote about will never be there again, but it's fresh there in the books, and the younger ones can actually, you know, see and know what was going on at the time. The Plymouth, the center, the town, which is no longer there, what that was like. That to me is a saving grace, because it'll always be with me. So yes, that was part one. The Rising was part one. My growing up, my youth, you know, and leaving Montserrat and coming to the United States. Now, the second part I'm working on now, which should be interesting because it encompasses the volcano and all of the rest. Everything that I write, by the way, is autobiographical. It can be very dangerous to do that, but it can be very liberating.
Well, I was privileged.
You have to live an interesting life.
And you certainly have, my brother. Edgar, yeah, thank you. Thank
God for the word, though. As they say, in the beginning was the word.
Absolutely. The power of Nam.
Thank you,
my brother. It's been a pleasure. We've been chatting with Edgar Nkosi White, a playwright, poet, novelist, musician, ordained minister, and an educator, excuse me. And Edgar, I know you've been, excuse me, doing your lectures in and around. You're going to that conference in Barbados. If one would like to get in touch with you, how can one do that?
Well, there's my website, Edgar Nkosi White. You can, at Yahoo. And you can also, thank God now, you can Google. You just Google my name, and there is just a plethora of stuff out there, man. I've been publishing in Monthly Review, and everything is online.
Great articles.
Yes, and you can just do that. And also, it's on the Yale University website, interestingly enough. So, yes, just Google my name, Edgar Nkosi White, and everything is there for you. So
and
God
that's
bless the internet. They've not taken that away from us yet. Use it.
And the operative word is yet.
Yeah. too much knowledge there, my friend.
my brother,
access to information.
My brother, thank you again.
We've been
chatting with Edgar Nkosi White, the author of several plays and books, Lament for Rastafari, Masada, The Long and Cheerful Road to Slavery, and, of course, his newest novel, The Rising, and we're looking forward to the second part of that. Of course, he has penned some children's books. I mean, Sati the Rastafarian, Omar at Christmas, The Children of Night. Edgar, thank you very much. We're going to take a break, and we're going to continue a short, a continued tribute to the King of Pop, Michael Jackson.
Love,
we'll be right back.
And a gratitude to the memory of Michael Joseph Jackson. The world's greatest entertainer ever.
Like a bolt of light, lightning, the lights of the sky. Yes. With one note, he can make us dance, make us cry.
He can make us cry.
He possessed. Yes. If you messed with the King of Pop, you took second place. There's one thing that I know,
that I know.
There's one thing I know for sure.
I know for sure.
If there's one thing
I know in my bones,
the thriller stands alone. The thriller stands alone. He walked.
Well, as many of you know, that June 25th was the one-year anniversary of the demise of Michael Jackson, the King of Pop, who left us rather suddenly, and the celebrations do continue on his life. And joining us is a recording artist, Courtney Newell, who's laid down some beautiful music in tribute to Michael Jackson. Courtney, welcome to Caribbean Forum, and welcome to the Uhuru Radio Network.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you indeed. Thank you very much.
Pleasure
to be here.
Yes, yeah, nice to have you. You have been recording some interesting music over the years, and an earlier project on which you embarked, which touched the lives of many people throughout the world, resulting from the horrible, and I must repeat, the horrible death of Amadou Diallo in New York City, who was blown away by New York, New York's finest, but the New York, members of the New York Police Department, which was a disturbing situation, and you recorded a song in his tribute, and you have continued your fine work. And you're not only a recording artist, you're also a screenwriter. Let us know why why you feel it is necessary to pay tributes to our brothers and sisters who not necessarily come against a horrible situation like Amadou Diallo and the unfortunate situation in which Michael Jackson found himself. But why do you feel it is necessary for you as an artist, as a recording artist, to pay tribute to these individuals?
Well, Ron, you know, it's very important for me to pay tribute to them because it's hard. It's disheartening to me to hear about situations like this. Even though Amadou was nowhere as famous as Michael Jackson in life, in death, people around the world reacted to that massacre. There's no other way for me to really describe it. People who would normally have picked up the papers and seen, oh, okay, someone else was just shot by the NYPD. Okay, turn the page over. But that particular death, being shot 41 times, resonated with them. I've met people recently from China, Beijing, who knew about that. These individuals, their spirits cry out. You know, their spirits cry out to me. And even though, like I was saying just now, these two individuals were so different in terms of their fame or, you know, people knowing so much about them, the result in terms of their spirits not being comfortable, they cry out for someone to speak about that. And I give them a voice. With Amadou, it was eerie because I actually played Amadou in a play. And I tried to meet with his mom and Reverend Sharpton when the whole situation was ongoing. But the thing is that when I do something like that, I can feel the spirit of these individuals. I mean, it might sound eerie to the next person, but mm-hmm. I can feel it. And, you know, I want these spirits to rest in peace. And Michael died. That was not a good way to go, man. It was horrible. It's a horrible death. Maybe you'll have to go sometime. But I feel that the millions of people he touched, millions of lives he touched, he brought so much love to the world that I felt it was my responsibility to honor that and pay tribute to him. It was a tribute to Michael as well as a gift to Quincy Jones and Michael's family.
Okay. When we hear... excuse me. When we hear of such incidents like Amadou Diallo, and back there in New York, Eleanor Bumpers.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear about the protests, whether it be led by Al Sharpton or whomever, that, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, we will make sure that this does not happen again. When will again end?
That's a very good question. And the Sean Bell and the Yusuf Hawkins.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Actually, it's ironic because the day, I would never forget because I work at the United Nations, I would never forget the day that the verdict was being handed down. Everything stopped. I'd never forget that. Everything stopped at the UN. I was in the General Assembly Hall, and I forget who was about to make a speech. I forget who it was. But I would bet my money that the person cut short that speech to run back, you know, backstage to hear the news. And they were, you know, everyone was cleared of charges. Enough. I actually wrote a song about Sean Bell, the Sean Bell incident called 50. I haven't released that yet, but... you know, it keeps happening over and over again, and they keep just getting a pass. This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. People have to be aware. People have to take to the streets. People have to march, whether it's a silent protest or whatever it is. I'm not advocating any kind of violence, of course. We're not going to do what they did. But the thing is that we have to stand up. We have to stand up for this. This is ridiculous. And it could be anyone's son. It could be, that's the whole idea of the Amadou Diallo song. That's the approach I took. Because when I was being interviewed years ago, I think it was Ogoso mentioned to me, said, Courtney, this is actually a love song. And that was the approach I took, Ron. I know it could have gone in a very angry direction, but I thought that the rappers were going to take that that approach. What I did was I actually put the song in context of the world, and I said, look, it could happen to your son. It could happen to this other person's son. So what I did is I took the language of the imagination, the six languages, and I incorporated those languages into the song. And I said, you know, you've got to step back. As a matter of fact, I got, this is interesting, and a lot of people don't know this, I received 17 calls the day that an interview I did with the Daily News came out. And I received a call from the president of the Police Beloved Association. Yes, he hadn't heard the song. But the first question he asked me, I would never forget his words. This is a verbatim quote. He said, when are you people going to write songs about blacks killing blacks, about black officers killing blacks? And I said, you know what? If you could tell me the story where black officers have murdered, you know, Caucasian or non-black citizens like that, you let me know and I'll write a song about that too. He got very quiet, but an undercover cop came to my house. But, you know, it's another story. But the fact, the point I'm making is that we have to be aware, and we have to keep on, we've got to keep the pressure up, and we've got to put more love out there in the world so that we could generate, you know, positive vibes, because love is the most powerful force in the world. But we still have to be aware of what's happening out there, too.
Well, the mere fact that you got that call and you subsequently got that visit, your music is being effective.
I hope so. I hope so.
I asked my previous guest, Edgar Nkosi White, who's a playwright and a musician also, mm-hmm. and I asked him if he needs a certain space to write. I'd like to ask you that same question.
A certain space.
To be creative.
Right. For me, well, one thing I do need to do is be an atmosphere that's pretty quiet for me, so I can hear myself, I can hear my thoughts. But the creativity itself comes from anywhere. It could be on a plane. I remember writing a song about a boxer or a Guyanese boxer, Gwendolyn Selbama O'Neill. I was on a plane with her coming back, and I couldn't sleep coming back from going to Guyana, actually, from New York. She just lost the fight in Atlanta. She's a champion now, thank God. Happy for her about that. But it doesn't matter where the inspiration strikes, because I don't control that. But in terms of the writing, the creativity itself, I just need to be somewhere quiet. Trees, by a, kind of like a park or somewhere. By the water. Water's always good for me.
Oh, right.
That works for me.
Yeah, you can put me in the water and you can just kiss me goodbye.
That's it. Guyana's great for my creativity, too. I mean, going up in the country somewhere. I remember writing the song El Dorado as I was coming back from Omai. And a friend of mine turned to me, he looked at the ground, he said, you saw some flecks of gold. He said, Courtney, this is El Dorado. And after Arrowhead, I was looking for another theme. I was thinking, how can I top Arrowhead? I don't think I could top it, but how can I come up with another idea? And that was it. El Dorado just started writing itself. I don't really control the process of the writing, because when it comes to me, I just move the pen. I could wake up 3-4 times in the morning, and I will not sleep if the muse is coming at me. Like I said, music could be a wonderful wife, but a cruel mistress. You've got to pay attention. Yeah.
Tell us about your new project, Similar Differences, a screenplay that you're engaged in currently.
Oh, yeah. Similar Differences is very, very dear to my heart in many ways. A lot of the story is my actual story and my family story. I guess people got to kind of read between the lines. Those who know me will know exactly what's happening there. It's an interracial love story that takes place between a Hindu Guyanese guy who doesn't really accept his Hindu roots. He's living in Queens, and he's an equal opportunity dater or player. He dates girls, Chinese, Caucasian, black, it doesn't matter.
And one day on the parkway, he meets during Labor Day. He meets a beautiful sister from Guyana who has kind of lost her way in some ways. She doesn't want anything to do with Guyanese guys. She doesn't want anything to do with African-American guys. She just wants an African guy. She wants to go back to roots, you know. And they're so totally different. The only thing they have in common is they were both born in Guyana. And later on, at the end of the film, you realize that the screenplay, you realize that there was a commonality that they shared. But they meet, and, you know, much against her desires or other desires take over. And she starts to fall in love with this guy, but she's scared. But they end up, you see the way of life in Queens for the Hindu people, and you see that as the film progresses, you see that they have more in common than they would have normally thought. But there's a lot of pressure on his side because his people want him to marry a nice Indian girl and basically stay within the tradition, which is totally understandable. But he's been living in America for so long, he views things a little differently. So he's struggling against his Hindu culture, and she's struggling against her her inner mind. But they end up going back to Guyana. So it's actually two love affairs, the love affair between the two of these seemingly star-crossed lovers and the love affair between them and the country of their birth. So they end up falling in love with Guyana and how that happens. The whole idea is really to showcase, without giving a whole lot away, I guess I've given a lot away already, but the idea behind the project, and I refer to it as a project, not just a film or a screenplay, is to showcase the dynamic culture, the rich cultural heritage of Guyana, with 100% Guyanese soundtrack. I don't think that's ever happened before, ranging from all genres of music, pop, R&B, soca, and tapping into artists who have Guyanese heritage, the Deborah Coxes, the Rihannas, for example. It's pretty ambitious in that regard, but I'm hoping that when things actually start moving, I can get these folks to come on board and contribute a song. Maybe you can get the government to kind of pressure them. I don't know.
Well, I certainly wish you all the best on that project and all other projects that you're engaging yourself in. In the background is your tribute to Michael Jackson, The Thriller Stands Alone.
Yes, indeed.
Courtney Newell, thank you very much. If one would like to get in touch with you for whatever reason, how can one do that?
Well, my email address is courtnoir, that's courtnoir at yahoo.com. And my cell is always on. It's 347-777-6179. I'm looking forward to hearing from folks what their ideas about concerning the film and the music, and seeing if it touches them the way it touched me, because I love the song. And hopefully, in fact, I know Michael's hearing it.
Absolutely.
And he's dancing somewhere.
It's a wonderful project. Thank you, Courtney. We're gonna have our listeners listen to some of this. The Thriller Stands Alone by Courtney Newell, his tribute to Michael Jackson. Thank you, Courtney.
Thank you, Ron.
Right.
Happy Independence Day. Be well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Peace.
It's amazing how much love you give to the world. Yes, grown men and women, boys and girls. There's one thing that I know,
and I know
there's one thing I know for sure. If there's one thing
I know in my bones,
the thriller stands alone.
Thank you.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
Sounds of Haiti. We're going to chat about Haiti, the developments or the lack thereof, with our guest, Rick Germain. He'll be joining us shortly. So in the meantime, you can continue listening here on the Uhuru Radio Network. I'm Ron Bob Semple and Caribbean Forum, heard every Saturday from 8
from Nain. I'm trying to steal some of the chief's, the chairman's hours. From 9 until 11 every Saturday morning, Eastern Standard Time, here on UhuruNews.com. And we'll be right back with our guest, Rick Germain, as we chat about Haiti and the latest development, especially now that the rains are here. And once we get back, if you'd like to join us, you can call us here within the United States at 727-565-1599. Or you can Skype us at Uhuru Radio. Or email us at DJ@uhururadio.com. We'll be right back.
No?
Yes, sir.
Call me in the landline because I...
For those of you who are wondering what that song is, that's Charles Mingus himself with a Haitian fight song. You're listening to Caribbean Forum here on the Uhuru Radio Network. I'm Ron Bob Semple. And as I mentioned in our opening, we will be discussing the developments or the lack thereof of the situation in Haiti since that devastating earthquake back in January. And joining us this morning is a Haitian national, Rick Jamin. Am I pronouncing your name correctly, sir?
Yes, that's right.
Thank you. Bonjour, monsieur. Good morning. And,
oui, bonjour.
Morning and welcome to Caribbean Forum. Rick, you were in Haiti recently. I'm not too sure whether you were there before the rains came. But while you were there, give us a perspective of what has happened since the earthquake with your native brothers and sisters and also the infrastructure there in Haiti.
First of all, I want to thank you, Juan, for giving me the opportunity to be in this program.
You're welcome, sir.
And also want to thank the listeners of the who are listening right now. And yes, I was in Haiti a little bit before that, before the earthquake, back in November. And for those who doesn't know me, my name is, like you already said it, Rick Jermaine. And I'm with Helping Hand Worldwide, which is a non-profit organization. We always do some work in the Caribbean, in Haiti in particularly. And I was there in November, and also was back in after the earthquake in January, and went back with another team to support back again in February of this year. So when we were there, the devastation, as everybody already knows, it's nothing new. It's really, really unbelievable. The situation before that was bad, and now we can say that's the worst situation ever for Haiti. And to tell the truth, Ron, I think it will take a lot of work and a long time commitment to get the situation resolved the way it is right now.
Now, Rick, now that CNN is no longer there broadcasting on a daily basis, nor Fox News, nor MSNBC, what the rest of the world is not seeing that is happening in Haiti right now?
What the rest of the world is not seeing, one, is the devastation that is still there. We have people on the street, they don't have a place to stay, and people are still under the rugs, even though the camera are no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
The cameras are no longer there, but, you know, people are still under the rug. They're still fighting to make it day by day and to get things back to normal.
And, whatever normal will be, because what I would like you to share with us, Rick, is in any part of Haiti, any part of the island, is it noticeable that there there is progress or there are efforts being made to change the lives of the Haitian people?
Well, it's hard to notice. If there's some efforts being made to change the lives, it's hard to notice. I'm not saying there's none, but it's hard to notice because the devastation is so great.
Mm-hmm.
It's so big, then it will take, you know,
any little change is just minuscule.
Any little change looks like minuscule. Mm-hmm. It will be hard to notice right now,
mm-hmm.
As it is. But you know, like I said, it will take the commitment of every Haitian and every other nation that are willing to help to, you know, do the little bit that you can to change somebody's lives. If you're waiting for the government to do it, it may never happen because they never done it before. So why now?
Are you saying that because of the inexperience of the government in a situation like this, that you may not see that change, or there's a concerted effort by the government not to have change made?
I'm not saying there's a concerted effort not to have change made, but like I said, Haiti been like that. We've been independent. We have our independence for over 200 and some years.
Mm-hmm.
And before the earthquake, the devastation was there. And you can see it on the people on the street, the lack of job, the lack of, you know, organization, the lack of everything that you can imagine. So right now, it will be, you have the earthquake, which we don't have any good training on how to handle devastation like of that kind. So that will make it even bigger and even, you know, less on the part of the government to get something done because maybe they don't have the infrastructure in place to take care of that.
I'm sorry to cut you. There has been concern. Well, I don't know if it's concern, but it may be a fact that quite a bit of the money that was pledged has not been received. You may hear $45 billion or an astronomical figure, but how much of that money has actually been in hand? Do you have any idea?
I do not have any idea, but they break it down on the website, most of these companies, because we have a tendency of believing the big companies to give our money, to give funds, believing that will help, but most of the time, it's not the case. Most of it goes to overhead and other places instead of in a little percentage. I would not say about a third of it, if it's a third of it, reach the people on the ground who really need. You know, that's the problem. That's why we come up with. That's why we have this organization we call Helping Hand Worldwide, which we have our website as myhelpinghandworldwide.org. Our objective was before the earthquake, not during the earthquake. Way before the earthquake, we were touching lives through the churches, through other churches that we partner with on the ground, because these people, they know the people they're dealing with. They have firsthand. It's not like they're going to different community, but what I believe that we can make a difference in our community, which will spread over the whole country. So everybody can make a difference. Everybody can contribute the little bit they can to change somebody's lives. I think that will, you know, will go forward. You'll get more people. You'll change more lives than all these organizations combined.
What kind of services does your organization provide?
What our organization provides, we do provide education. Mostly we focus on the orphans at first. That's what we were focusing on. The one that cannot help themselves, the one that cannot speak for themselves, that's the purpose of it. We help them pay for their schooling. They then pay for their schooling, pay for shelter, give them a place to stay and feed them every day. That's what our organization is doing right now. We were doing that in the past, and we continue doing that as we speak.
Have you been getting any sort of resistance from, say, the powers that be?
We're not having any resistance because what we are doing, we're not going, what we say, try to get the spotlight from the government, because, you know, we're just trying to do what is right, helping people in need. And that's why we're just doing it the way we know it's effective. Where right now it's we can say we have about 100 people that we're feeding every day, and provide shelter for them. We're not going to do it, like, we don't have the means to do it big like other, like you said, the Red Cross or other organization, but we're doing it effectively with the people that we have.
Last week on our broadcast, we discussed the HIV/AIDS epidemic in the Caribbean, and history has shown us that in Haiti, prior to the earthquake, there seemed to have been a reduction in the amount of cases of those contracted the virus. Now that there are so many nationals living in close proximity to each other, in parks, on the street, how concerned is your organization, Helping Hands Worldwide, how concerned are you that there could be a preponderance of this age, of the spreading of the HIV/AIDS virus again in Haiti?
Well, any time you're in a country as poor as Haiti, even if you look in Africa where people are exploiting others because they have the means to do so, and the other are in need, and they have lack, and you can provide them, you will find that, you know, not only you're going to have the, if you talk about sex trafficking or people using them for sex and then try to pay them or somewhere, you're going to have some type of disease like that that is, you know, spreading around. And that's the reason why we focus more on helping people, because I believe that some people are in desperate situation. And when they find somebody who tell, okay, I'm going to provide you with such and such, and in return, you know, for sex, they're in desperate need. They will take it. Okay, that's the reason why we focus on helping them get a better education in the future. We are working hardly to help them get to technical skills where they will be able to sustain themselves. So if they're able to sustain themselves, then that will create less and less dependency on other people who try to take advantage of them in order to provide them, you know, the basic they need to live, which is food and shelter and water. That's what we are working on.
How is Helping Hands Worldwide funded?
We are funded through our corporate sponsors and also individuals who are willing to make a tax-deductible donation through our website, and also through whatever events that we are doing. They want to support us. That's how we are funded.
Are there any restrictions placed on you by the corporate sponsors?
We do not have any restrictions right now, as far as, you know, the same restrictions that is for all non-profit organizations, that's the same restriction we have, but otherwise we don't have none.
Rick, I'm going to ask you to do something on this broadcast. I would like you to appeal to the listeners here on this Uhuru Radio Network, those who are of Haitian ascent or descent, to make an appeal to the listeners who are willing to assist organizations such as yours, so that you can continue this work that you're doing. And I'd like you to first do it in Creole and then in English, please.
First of all, Ndareme, Mode, tout moun kap tande program sa, pou organizasyon anon li men, nirele Helping Hand Worldwide, eke website nou se myhelpinghandworldwide.org, Nous allons faire un tax deductible et donation dans le website, non? Ou du moins, nous allons ouvrir les volontaires time, parce que nous allons ouvrir le temps pour aider nous à avancer. Nous accepter ça tout. Nous allons arriver nous dans 813-270-6371. Ou bien, nous allons aller dans le website, nous, côté du partners or become a volunteer. Et que vous allez mettre des informations et que nous-mêmes nous contacter pour voir qui gens vous allez aider nous dans le temps ou bien avec donation par. Et puis, so I'd like to tell all the listeners right now that we have a website set up. It's still under construction. It's not totally finished yet. You can visit us at myhelpinghandworldwide.org. There you can, if you want to become a volunteer, you can help us by becoming a volunteer. We always in need for people, good people to help us move forward. You can help us either by volunteer or make a donation or pledge on every month or one-time donation to help us keep doing the work that we are doing. Because we believe that everyone can make a difference. Everyone, with whatever little or big, you can make a difference. Start in your church, in your community, and then that can spread all over the world. And I believe that's the belief of Helping Hands Worldwide. We believe that if we put our hands together, we can make a greater impact in the community than we can imagine.
Rick, is there a telephone number one can call to get some further information?
They can call us at 813-270-6371, or they can call us as well at 813-965-8509.
Repeat that, please.
813-965-8509. Or they can go online. There's a contact us information, or if they want to become partners or volunteers, they can fill out that form online, and we'll be able to contact them to see where they want to serve in our organization. Because we have a lot of places, a lot of things that we need to done, but we need more people to get it done.
Well,
so
Rick,
we appreciate anybody.
Thank you
thank you very much for the opportunity.
No, thank you for what you and your staff and your volunteers are doing, Helping Hands Worldwide. You can contact them at myhelpinghandworldwide.org, or you can call them at area code 813-270-6371 or 813-965-8509. Rick, thank you very much, and bonsoir.
Bonsoir. Have a blessed day. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Rick Germain from the Helping Hands Worldwide, and they're doing their part in trying to assist the brothers and sisters in Haiti who are still suffering, who are experiencing a lot of discomfort, and especially the fact that the hurricane season is here, and the rains are flooding the island because of the deforestation. There is no resistance for that water coming down those mountains. So do what you can to help our brothers and sisters in Haiti as we go deeper into this hurricane season. Mexico just got hit a couple of days ago, and on this weekend, this 4th of July weekend, where a lot of folks may be celebrating, we're going to come right back in a couple with the meaning of the 4th of July. The words of Frederick Douglass. Fellow citizens, pardon me. Allow me to ask, why am I called upon to speak here today? What have I or those I represent to do with your national independence? Are the great principles of political freedom and of natural justice embodied in that Declaration of Independence extended to us? And am I therefore called upon to bring our humble offering to the national altar and to confess the benefits and express devout gratitude for the blessings resulting from your independence to us? Would to God, both for your sakes and ours, that an affirmative answer could be truthfully returned to these questions? Then would my task be light and my burden easy and delightful? For who is there so cold that a nation's sympathy could not warm him? Who so obdurate and dead to the claims of gratitude that would not thankfully acknowledge such priceless benefits? Who so stolid and selfish that would not give his voice to swell the hallelujahs of a nation's jubilee when the chains of servitude had been torn from his limbs? I am not that man. In a case like that, the dumb might eloquently speak and the lame man leap as an hart. But such is not the state of the case. I say it with a sad sense of disparity between us. I'm not included within the pale of glorious anniversary. Your high independence only reveals the immeasurable distance between us. The blessings in which you this day rejoice are not enjoyed in common. The rich inheritance of justice, liberty, prosperity, and independence bequeathed by your fathers is shared by you, not by me. The sunlight that brought light and healing to you has brought stripes and death to me. This 4th of July is yours, not mine. You may rejoice, I must mourn. To drag a man in fetters into the grand illuminated temple of liberty and call upon him to join you in joyous anthems were inhuman mockery and sacrilegious irony. Do you mean, citizens, to mock me by asking me to speak today? If so, there is a parallel to your conduct. And let me warn you that it is dangerous to copy the example of a nation whose crimes, towering up to heaven, were thrown down by the breath of the Almighty, burying that nation in irrevocable ruin. I can today take up the plaintive lament of a peeled and woe-smitten people. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there, they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they who wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. Fellow citizens, above your national tumultuous joy, I hear the mournful wail of millions whose chains, heavy and grievous yesterday, are today rendered more intolerable by the jubilee shouts that reach them. If I do forget, if I do not faithfully remember those bleeding children of sorrow this day, may my right hand forget her cunning, and may my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. To forget them, to pass lightly over their wrongs, and to chime in with the popular theme would be treason, most scandalous and shocking, and would make me a reproach before God and the world. My subject then, fellow citizens, is American slavery. I shall see this day and its popular characteristics from the slave's point of view. Standing there, identified with the American bondman, making his wrongs mine, I do not hesitate to declare with all my soul that the character and conduct of this nation never looked blacker to me than on this 4th of July. Whether we turn to the declarations of the past or to the professions of the present, the conduct of the nation seems equally hideous and revolting. America is false to the past, false to the present, and solemnly binds herself to be false to the future. Standing with God and the crushed and bleeding slave on this occasion, I will, in the name of humanity, which is outraged, in the name of liberty, which is fettered, in the name of the Constitution and the Bible, which are disregarded and trampled upon, dare to call in question and to denounce with all the emphasis I can command, everything that serves to perpetuate slavery, the great sin and shame of America. I will not equivocate. I will not excuse. I will use the severest language I can command, and yet not one word shall escape me that any man whose judgment is not blinded by prejudice, or who is not at heart a slaveholder, shall not confess to be right and just. For the present, it is enough to affirm the equal manhood of the Negro race. It is not astonishing that while we are plowing, planting, and reaping, using all kinds of mechanical tools, erecting houses, constructing bridges, building ships, working in metals of brass, iron, copper, silver, and gold, that while we are reading, writing, and ciphering, acting as clerks, merchants, and secretaries, having among us lawyers, doctors, ministers, poets, authors, editors, orators, and teachers, that while we are engaged in all manner of enterprises common to other men, digging gold in California, capturing the whale in the Pacific, feeding sheep and cattle on the hillside, living, moving, acting, thinking, and planning. Those words are an excerpt from the speech delivered by Frederick Douglass, one of the foremost leaders of the abolitionist movement, which fought to end slavery within the United States and the decades prior to the Civil War. That speech was made on July 5th, 1852. Well, thank you for listening to Caribbean Forum here on the Uhuru Radio Network. We will be preempted next week because of the 5th Congress, which will take place in Washington, D.C., July 10th to the 14th, so we will be with you the following week. Watch your thoughts, they become words. Watch your words, they become actions. Watch your actions, they become habits. Watch your habits, they become character. Watch your character, for it becomes your destiny. Stay strong and be aware. Have a safe weekend.